As I thought about my teaching style, I had to admit that sometimes I sounded like a drill sergeant barking orders. Sharpen your pencil. Raise your hand. Stay in your seat. Keep your eyes on your own paper. Get in line. Get rid of your gum. Instead of teaching content, I was spending most of my time trying to control my out-of-control students. But if I didn't, how would they ever learn to behave in a civilized way? And yet it seemed that the more orders I gave, the more resistant they became. Precious class time was lost dealing with defiance and power struggles. On especially tough days, I went home with my patience spent, my energy drained, and my strength sapped. I felt like the joke that says, "I have one nerve left, and you're on it." I went back to my copy of How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and reread the chapter titled Engaging Cooperation. All the examples took place in the home. What would happen if I substituted school examples? I jotted down my revisions of one of the exercises and brought them to school the next day to share with my colleagues at lunch. This time, Ken played teacher and we were the guinea pigs. He read the words I'd written down and Maria, Jane, and I reacted to them as students. Here's what he said and here's how we reacted.
Okay, first I'll blame and accuse. You forgot your pencil again? What did you think you were going to write with? Now we have to stop class, waste everyone's time, and find you a pencil.
I feel humiliated.
I never do anything right.
The teacher is mean.
Okay, I'll try threatening. If I see one more spitwad, I'll pull you out of class so fast your head will spin. And if this behavior continues, you're going to be suspended.
I don't believe you.
I don't care.
I'm scared.
Now I'll issue some orders. Stop that talking. Put away your notebook. Get in a straight line now. Hurry up.
I'm not your slave.
I'll do it, but slowly.
How do you get out of this prison?
Maybe what you kids need is a teacher who lectures and moralizes. It wasn't nice to break John's pen. How would you like it if someone broke your pen? If someone lets you borrow something, you need to take good care of it, just as you would want them to take care of your things. Now, don't you think you owe John an apology? I do.
I must be a bad person.
Blah, blah, blah.
I stopped listening. We stared at each other when the exercise was over. Jane voiced what was in our minds.
If we experience such anger and despair when we're just pretending to be students, what must real students feel?
Especially when they hear that kind of talk at home, too. My sister is always telling her children, "If your grades don't improve, I'm taking away television. You should study the way your brother does. Maybe you'd get A's too. You don't do your work because you're lazy." She's always after her kids, and their father is always lecturing them.
Okay, so a lot of the things we normally say to kids either make them feel bad about themselves or bad about us. But the fact remains, it's still our job to make them behave themselves.
That's right. So what should a teacher do instead? Outside of trying to be nice and saying, "Please do this," or "Please don't do that."
In response to Maria's question, I took out my copy of How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and turned to the Engaging Cooperation chapter. For the rest of the lunch period, we all worked together at transposing the techniques of engaging cooperation to the school setting. Here are some examples of what we came up with. We could describe what we see or describe the problem. So when a first grader spills paint on the floor, instead of blaming and accusing,
"Billy, you're so careless. Look what you did to the floor."
The teacher can describe the problem like this.
"Billy, there's some paint on the floor."
Or when your sixth graders are getting too boisterous at the water fountain, instead of giving them orders,
"Stop that racket and get back to your class. Now, move!"
You can simply describe.
"Boys, you can be heard clear down the hall."
Another skill is to give information. For example, suppose you find a student writing on the desktop. Instead of accusing him,
"What do you think you're doing? Who gave you the right to deface this desk?"
You give information.
"Tommy, desks are not for writing on. Paper is for writing on."
Offering a choice is another effective method of engaging cooperation. A student sits at his desk, head in hand, staring at a blank piece of paper. Instead of putting him down,
"You still haven't started on your report. At this rate, it won't be done until the next century."
You could give him a choice.
It's hard to start a report. Do you want to think about it some more, or do you want to talk it over with me?
It also helps to avoid lectures or long explanations.
Gina, you did it again. You never leave room for margins. That's why your papers always look so sloppy.
Instead, say it with a word.
Gina, margins.
Describing what you feel can also promote cooperation. Instead of this?
The substitute told me how rotten you all were to her. You ought to be ashamed of yourselves.
Try to describe what you feel.
I didn't like hearing that my class gave the substitute a hard time.
And finally, try putting it in writing. Here's a note that a teacher sent to a student who was late handing in her term paper.
Dear Cindy, your term paper was due last Friday. Let me know when I can expect it. I look forward to your reply. Sincerely, Mr. Johnson.